Welcome to the 100th episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I'm Dani Hamilton, and you're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Our blood sugar affects how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. In this show, I'll help you understand more about your blood sugar and give you practical tips to help you gain more energy, have better sleep, crush cravings, have clear skin, happy moods, burn fat, and so much more. This show is about taking action and taking your health destiny into your own hands. Are you ready to feel better? Let's do it. Hi friends, I'm so excited that this is the 100th episode of this show. When I first started the show in December 2019, I was still working as a speech therapist. I was Danielle Durante. I wasn't Danielle Hamilton. And I had no idea what I was doing. I just said that I thought that I would be good at podcasting because I love teaching and I love explaining things and I liked speaking better than writing. And I had always wanted to share the information that I knew that I felt would be helpful to some people. And here we are. We are at episode number 100, and I'm so excited for today's episode. I had a very special guest join me to interview me because I asked all of you to submit questions for the 100th episode on my podcast, on my Instagram. And I got a bunch of great questions. So thank you to those who submitted the questions. And my very special guest is going to be reading them, and we're going to be chatting, and this is an All About Me episode. So the very first episode I did was also all about me, but in a different way because that was all my story. So a lot of you are maybe newer listeners to the podcast and don't know me as well, or maybe haven't listened to that first episode. And you know, a lot of time has passed since 2019. A lot of things have changed, right? So I was really excited to share a little bit more about some things about me, some things about, you know, I don't really talk about what I'm doing in terms of, you know, how many carbs I'm eating and things like that, because I want people to focus on their own journey and we all need different things at different times. So I kind of dive a little bit more into that. I answer some really personal random questions that people ask me, and there's a lot of lessons and little nuggets in here that I hope you'll find helpful and interesting. And so yeah, I guess we'll hop right into the interview that I did with my very special guest. One quick thing I wanted to share with you before we jump into the interview is that my friends over at Get So Well have a fasting insulin test that you can take at home. So I've been talking about testing insulin, testing blood sugar. It's really important that you really know these numbers for yourself so you know what you're working with. If your blood sugar is going too low, if you are struggling with hormone issues, if you have sugar cravings, if your blood sugar is high, if you're in the pre-diabetic or diabetic range, it's really, really important to know what your insulin level is doing, because that will drive what your treatment is, right? So insulin can be on the rise for years before we ever see a change in our blood glucose levels. And doctors are not testing fasting insulin. Fasting insulin is different than fasting glucose. Glucose is a sugar and the insulin is a hormone. So we really need to know what insulin is doing, because insulin has huge impacts on all of our hormones and all of our body. So it's a big driver of weight loss resistance, hormone imbalances, infertility, brain fog, and even Alzheimer's dementia. So it's super important to know what your fasting insulin is doing. And if you ask your doctor, sometimes they say no. So first step, ask your doctor for a fasting insulin test. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, ask your doctor. If they say no, which I'm telling you they might, I recommend to fire your doctor, because it's kind of crazy that they wouldn't know something that is so, so crucial to health, and they're just not in the business of helping people get well. But other than that, if you want to know what your fasting insulin is, So Well has an at-home test that you can get and just do in the privacy of your own home. You do, you put some blood on this little thing, you send it in, and then they give you your fasting insulin, your fasting glucose, your A1C, all your cholesterol numbers, including HDL, LDL, and triglycerides. They give you, I believe at this moment, they're doing vitamin B12 and TSH. I think that's going to shift to be vitamin D and CRP, which is a measure of inflammation. So they have a lot of things in the works. They also have some really great supplements. There's this one called Get So Calm, and it has L-theanine in it and some other calming nutrients. And I really like that one. It has some GABA. So if you're feeling just sort of like overrun or really busy and kind of strung out, I really like that supplement. So just wanted to share that with you before we get started today. And you can head to getsowell.com and you can use the code DANNY10 to get 10% off. But please ask your doctor first, see if you can get it covered by insurance. But if you can't, remember our friends at getsowell.com. All right, let's jump into the interview. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me for my 100th episode. I can't believe that I'm already at number 100. I started this podcast back in 2019 and in December. And back then I was just, you know, had a dream that some people would want to hear what I had to say. And I feel lucky enough that, you know, this podcast is consistently in around number 20 now on the nutrition charts in the US, and we keep growing, and I just keep getting great feedback that this information is helping you all. And that is my greatest goal with this podcast. And if you hear noise, that's my cat trying to get out of the room that I'm in. So disregard that. Gray, Grayson, Gray, this doesn't make for a good podcast, buddy. You got to relax. Love you. Thank you. So I have a very special guest for you all today, and it is none other than the wonderful Michelle Hearn. Michelle, thanks so much for joining me for my 100th episode.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. It's such an honor.
Yeah, I realized that, you know, I wanted to, a while ago, that I wanted to make this episode an About Me episode, because I've heard that people do that, you know, and I used to be a longtime listener of the Balanced Bites podcast, and I heard them do it, I mean, millions of years ago, like in 2013. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I love that idea. And I thought that it would be really great if we could do it more in a conversational interview type format instead of just me reading your questions. So thanks so much for being here. And I just, you know, we have a great friendship, and also we're colleagues in this nutrition space. And I really appreciate you being here. You're a great listener, a great communication partner. So I'm really happy to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to do this with you.
Yeah, thanks. All right. So we can certainly dive in. So whenever you're ready.
Yeah. You know, and these are fantastic questions that, you know, your listeners have submitted. You know, the first one I'm sure you get asked all the time is, what started you on your journey as a health coach? Like, why did you, you know, want to go from the career you were pursuing to becoming a health coach?
Yeah. So my story started with my own sickness. You know, a lot of us have that pain to purpose, like story, and mine was certainly a pain to purpose story. And I struggled with my health for a really long time. I, you know, my whole life I had sicknesses, antibiotics, ear infections, strep throat, got my tonsils out, had crazy allergies and asthma and all sorts of issues. And I had to get all these allergy shots. I had, you know, tons of sinus infections, asthma, allergy pills, and I was just getting worse and worse and worse. And this was me in my early 20s. And I was going out of my mind. I was just so, so itchy. I was so tired from all these medications. I was really just struggling with so many aspects of my health. I didn't feel well. And then at the same time, I was working in a nursing home as a speech pathologist. And I was doing all these chart reviews, and I had to write down all my patients' diagnoses as well as all their medications. And I mean, I was spending like an hour a day just doing all these chart reviews, writing down the medications. And I'm sure as a dietitian who worked in a hospital, you can certainly relate to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I was seeing this happen, and I was noticing, you know, these people are in their, some of them in their 60s, but mostly 70s, 80s, 90s. And I was like, I am going to end up like this if something doesn't change. And meanwhile, I was going to all these doctors and asking them, what is causing this? Why is this happening to me? And no one had answers for me. No one could give me anything other than, well, it's just genetics, just bad luck, like bad luck. I mean, that's so disempowering to hear that. And the other thing that was happening, so I started learning about, by the grace of the universe, someone mentioned this book, and they were saying something about a caveman diet and this Paleolithic diet, how our ancestors used to eat. And that was something that just kind of struck me with this interest, because I was, when I was a kid, I'm like, Ma, my New York accent comes out as soon as I talk about my mom. I'm like, Ma, why, how come everyone in my age, all the kids my age, we all need braces and you guys didn't? Like, I thought that was kind of weird that my mom's generation, hardly anyone had braces. And in my generation, everyone had braces. So I was asking her this when I was a teenager. I was noticing, like, what I had to have contacts and glasses when the accent's still out. Contacts and glasses when I was young. I mean, I was in third grade when I got glasses, fifth grade when I got contacts. And I was like, how come? What happens if I was living years ago before they invented these things? Like, what would I do? And so I was always thinking about these health issues that we had that seemed commonplace, but just kind of wondering why that was, and how come, it was plaguing us. And so I heard about this paleo diet. I read the book by Rob Wolf called The Paleo Diet Solution, and my whole world just flipped. And it was like, do the opposite of everything you've been taught, flip the food pyramid upside down. Don't have 12 servings of healthy whole grains, get rid of the grains and embrace salt, embrace fat, embrace meat. And I was like, what the heck? This is so different than what I had been taught. And meanwhile, I was trying to be healthy by having whole wheat bread and low fat stuff and 100 calorie packs and granola bars, and I was struggling. So I was really open to doing something different. And the way that he explained, oh, how real food works, how our bodies weren't designed to consume processed food, and look at all the ingredients and look at how denatured these foods are, it just made so much sense to me. Like, I really felt it. It wasn't this like convincing that needed to happen. It was just like, oh, wow. That, like, I just knew as soon as I was reading that information that we had been lied to. So I had a lot of anger and rage from being lied to, being really sick, and just seeing all these people around me struggling all the time. I worked with kids as a speech therapist as well, and I was seeing it at the beginning of the lifespan with all these kids with developmental delays and autism and all sorts of issues. So I was seeing these issues impacting people across the lifespan just from my profession, just knowing people who are struggling. And I was like, I need to tell people about this. And so, of course, when you first learn about nutrition, I was so excited. I'm like, oh, I need to tell everyone. And not everyone is ready to hear it. So that's why I'm so grateful to have a podcast where it's like, oh, there are some people out there who do want to hear what I have to say. And this is, the perfect place for me to do that. So I healed myself. And then I just was working as a speech therapist and felt like, oh my goodness, if only I could tell you about diet and nutrition, your brain would be so much re more ready to capture and get the lessons from the therapy, whether it was kids or adults. And I just felt like I was in the wrong profession. I felt like I was, there were these kids who I worked with, and this is going to be controversial, but I'm going to put it out there. But I was working with a kid who had autism. He was characterized as having very severe autism. He was nonverbal. He was basically running back and forth in the room, turning on and off the lights and laughing for our first session, which was a half an hour. I was calling his name. I was making noise. I was playing music. I was doing all these things to try to get his attention. And I could not get this child's attention. He didn't look at me once. It was as if he did not know I was in the room, just turning on and off the lights, laughing. I couldn't get him to like sit and focus on anything. If I picked him up to sit him down, he would just get up and do it again. So I had been talking to the mom, and this is when I was a speech pathologist. So I was supposed to be doing speech therapy with this kid. So I, knowing about nutrition, I was like, oh my gosh, what is this kid eating? So the mom said that he was super obsessed with this powdered milk, and he was so obsessed with it. And a lot of times I was learning that kids with ASD get these obsessions with foods that are not good for them, and or that are actually inflaming them. And for some reason, the body produces endorphins when they consume these foods, so it makes them very addicting, even though they're not good for them. And so I was like, would you be open? You know, it's totally illegal. I was like, would you be open to, you know, seeing what happened if he didn't happen to have access to that powdered milk, right? And the mom was like, all right. He came in the next week, sat down with me on the floor, looked me in the eyes, joint attention, was laughing with me, still nonverbal, but the fact that he could change that much in 1 week from food, that would have taken years of speech therapy, years. And it was, I get so emotional because people are just struggling so much, and it was just so hard to not be able to have the tools to help someone and feel like I couldn't bring up this information that was so much more helpful at that moment than the therapy would have been. And that's not to say he didn't still need speech therapy, but I just felt so deeply that I was in the wrong place. And it was really hard to have studied nutrition and been, you know, been knowledgeable and have helped myself and just been stuck in that role of a speech therapist when that wasn't the information that I knew could help these people the most. And so I had to work my way out of being a speech therapist because I needed to make an income. So I had to be working as a nutritional therapist on the side. And so finally, in October 2020, I was able to retire fully from speech therapy. And initially, I was going to work with kids and work with kids on the autism spectrum because I saw some incredible results that some of my teachers had had with kids on the spectrum, complete reversal of the diagnosis for some kids, just, you know, going from nonverbal to verbal, just huge improvements and changes. And what kind of stopped me from that was that these kiddos are super picky, and I don't have kids, and I don't know how kids eat, and it's just really controversial, and it's really upsetting to a lot of people. I will probably lose listeners from the podcast just for saying that, and that's okay. Not everyone's ready for this information, and that's okay. Everyone's on their own journey, and I don't want to make anyone feel bad for what they're doing or not doing, but I felt like it was too hard to do that. And I also had my own story of the blood sugar stuff that I went through, and I felt that people really needed to hear that. So that's how that's why I became outcome.
Wow. Well,
I'm a
that you said a
nutritional
lot of
therapist.
things, and there's a couple of things in there. First of all, that's an incredible story, and I briefly can just relate to, as my story being a dietitian in traditional healthcare, when you get your health back and you have these answers, and you're not allowed to teach it, like legally, like you said, you're probably going to get in trouble. And unfortunately, unfortunately. Even dietitians, aren't able to give this information. When you get your health back, it can be a really big obstacle. So real quick, just a couple things I wanted to highlight. One, I think you brought up a really good point about teeth. Like, we don't really talk enough about the fact that your teeth, your enamel, are a big sign of your overall health. We see that we're seeing more tooth decay and other things in our generation, especially, people needing braces. And also, it just keeps coming back to me that you were never given this information. Like, you were seeking answers, going to doctors, help me. I don't feel well. I'm dealing with, like you said, all these different issues, and nobody had anything for you. So, that's an incredible story. And being able to see the difference in that, the kiddo you were working with in such a short period of time, I think really drives home the fact that these foods that we're eating have a very, big impact on our brain, and that's something that like is can be really hard for people to wrap their heads around. So, I want to ask you a little bit more about, I know you really specialize in blood sugar stability, So tell me about blood sugar crashes. Did you used to experience blood sugar crashes? What did you used to do about it? What did you think was the right thing to do about it? And how do you feel now?
Yeah, so first off, I just wanted to say thank you so much for your feedback on that. And these questions were submitted by you all. So Michelle has all the questions that you guys submitted. So thank you for doing that and writing in. And so blood sugar crashes, I used to experience them and I did not know what they were. So I would wake up and immediately need to eat because I'd feel shaky. I would have coffee and it had caffeine in it and it would spike my blood sugar and then crash it again. So I'd get shaky after the coffee as well. I used to think that it was just too much caffeine. So I'm like, oh, maybe I need to eat something because that was too much caffeine. And then I was that person, and I talk about this a lot, that I needed to eat before I went out to eat, take a granola bar with me wherever I went, or take food with me. I was always thinking about food, and I had this real fear of getting hungry. And I thought it was more like emotional, like this personal weird thing that I had. Like I couldn't tolerate it. Maybe it was something tied to something psychological. But what I realize now is that my fear of being hungry was a fear of a blood sugar crash. I was totally fearing that hunger because for me, my hunger wasn't healthy and it was a blood sugar crash. And ever since for me, I started becoming fat fueled and did keto, I never had any of those blood sugar crashes, any of that low blood sugar feeling. I can go a really long time without my blood sugar crashing because my body would just kick into ketosis. And so I have that ability to burn fat and that prevents those lows. And so if you're listening to this and you struggle with reactive hypoglycemia, it doesn't mean go keto because most of the time, if you're severe enough, like the people that I work with, you cannot go keto right away. So you probably will say, oh, I've tried keto and it didn't work for me. And it's like, yeah, that's common because your body's not ready to pull out all those carbs yet. So that's really common. So luckily, I don't deal with that anymore. And that's one of the main things that I teach people how to do is to have those same results.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think sometimes people get really discouraged if they try something and then it doesn't work. And it's not that that didn't necessarily work. It's you just might need to approach it a little bit differently. So, yeah, some questions about carbohydrates. So, are you able to tolerate carbohydrates now? And do you do any type of carb cycling?
Yes, so I actually am able to tolerate carbs now, and at first when I went keto, I was like, oh, I'm probably never going to have another carb again because it was working so well for me, and I think a lot of people feel like that. But at a certain point, it was for me after about 2-ish years of doing keto, and it happened to be right after my wedding. I just felt pulled to have carbohydrates, and it wasn't a craving, it was just, wow, I feel like my body needs carbs. It was this weird feeling, and so I started to reincorporate them and started to cycle them in. So whether that be I would have some carbs some nights at dinner or certain times during my monthly cycle, I would focus on, okay, these days I'm going to have some more carbs. And it is a slippery slope as someone who struggles with, I consider myself more like a person who has, I don't want to say, I don't consider myself a sugar addict. More, I say that I have a sugar dragon, and that sugar dragon can be woken up at certain times and start to call the shots. And so, in order to not wake up my sugar dragon, I have to make sure I'm really careful with certain things. And so, sometimes I need to find myself, I'll be like, oh, wow, I've had carbs every single day. And it's starting to be more like a habit as opposed to, do I really need carbs today? Did I have the workout that might demand that? Is it that time in the month, or is it that it's, berry season and I can't stop eating raspberries? So what raspberries are pretty low carbs, so usually I can get away with those. But yeah, so I think that answers that.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think a lot of people, when they get their health back with a very low carbohydrate diet, can be actually afraid to add some carbohydrates back in, even when
Yes.
intuitively it seems like their body might be seeking those, or I don't want to say craving, but maybe necessarily needing, especially if they're becoming more active.
Yeah.
So talk to me about hyperinsulinemia, because I think a lot of people don't, that's certainly something I wasn't taught as a dietitian. Like, what does that mean? And when did you learn about that?
So I started learning about high insulin, which goes, according to Dr. Ben Bickman, hyperinsulinemia means high levels of insulin. And he says, according to him, that goes hand in hand with insulin resistance because the body starts to become insulin resistant very quickly. So as soon as we have these high levels of insulin, the body's becoming resistant to it almost right away. Because the way I think about resistance is like if you're listening to your headphones and some guy comes by and is mowing the lawn, right? You kind of have to turn your headphones up, and then there's a truck and it's loud and you have to turn your headphones up. And if you had to pause the music and then press play again, it would be, oh, that would be so loud. So our ears and our body develop resistance really quickly to things like a tag on a shirt that's itching you. It'll be itchy for a few minutes and then we have the resistance to it. So it's almost like the body stops listening to these messages right away. And so when we have these high levels of insulin, they drive insulin resistance, which sets us up for all sorts of health issues. So episode two of my podcast is how high blood sugar and insulin affect every cell of the body. And for me, my symptoms of high insulin were that I had an insatiable sweet tooth. Like, talk about, the insulin, high insulin for me is like equated to my sugar dragon. So I get a lot of cravings. You can't go that long between meals. Oftentimes, you tend to have weight gain, difficulty losing weight. I had hormone imbalances. And for me, I had acne. So it comes with tons of symptoms. For a lot of people, you start to get signs of metabolic syndrome, which is also known as insulin resistance syndrome. So you might get high blood sugar, high blood pressure, increasing waistline, and cholesterol numbers that are not favorable. So this is where we start to see it impact all of these areas of our health. And it's kind of like whatever your flavor of insulin resistance is, that's what it, everyone has a different flavor, I guess, is what I want to say. So that's why I talk about mine, but I didn't have high blood pressure. That wasn't one of my symptoms. I didn't have high blood sugar. Mine went low. So, everyone's going to have a different sort of pattern of it, which is why it's hard to describe so well, why it feels kind of elusive, like I don't really know what that is. It's because everyone gets a different version of it, and not everyone gets really high blood sugar. So it's not always correlated with that because sometimes people get really low blood sugar, but oftentimes the blood sugar will go up. But then, unfortunately, for those people where it hasn't gone up enough, they get that medical gaslighting where the doctors are like, no, why should we test your insulin? Like, you don't even have high blood sugar. But insulin can be rising for years before we see a change in our blood sugar. So, hope that answers it.
Yeah, what I think is really interesting about hyperinsulinemia as well is you can also you can be a normal weight, you can be walking around, you can be lean, what we call kind of the skinny fat. And
Yeah.
when you're dealing with either, like you said, feeling like you have to eat all the time, not a lot of nausea, kind of that dizzy, shaky feeling, and definitely highlighting getting gaslighted by the medical industry, and not even necessarily that they're trying to tell you, like, oh, everything is fine. They just, a lot of doctors don't know.
They
They
don't.
don't know. They were not taught. So, I'm sure you get asked this quite a bit because, as a registered dietitians kind of poo-poo nutritional therapists. What's interesting though is I feel like your education and credentials, actually, I don't want to say are necessarily better than mine, but as a dietitian, unfortunately, most of my education is heavily, funded by a lot of the processed food industries. The Academy of Nutrition, which is the governing board of all dietitians, is heavily sponsored by General Mills, Frito-Lay, and your education is not. So tell me a little bit about your education, what you had to do to become a nutritional therapist. Yeah, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, so I went to the Nutritional Therapy Association, and I can link that in the show notes. They're actually opening enrollment again for new students. So a lot of people ask me where I got my credentials from, and they are expressed interest in wanting to do the same. So I went to the Nutritional Therapy Association. I became a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, which is a mouthful. And our program was not sponsored by anyone, and I absolutely loved the program. So I had already come into the program knowing a ton about nutrition because I had healed a lot of things in my health. I was already in this world. So at the time, I would say I was like in the paleo sphere and starting to learn more about keto and real food. And so when I went in, I had kind of these defenses up, like, what are you going to tell me? Because I already know some things, and I feel like I know I have a strong stance on what I believe. And the NTA just really added to that and deepened that knowledge. And they were right there with me. So one of the things that we learned about right away in school was the work of Weston A. Price, who was a dentist. And he was a dentist in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And throughout his practice as a dentist, he started to see, like, at first people just came in and it was like, oh, you're good to go. And then throughout his career, he started to see more crowding of teeth, more dental cavities, narrowing of arches so that the teeth couldn't fit as well. And so just like what we were talking about earlier, and he was lucky enough to retire and go around the world with a crew and his wife, and he studied all sorts of populations that were sort of cut off from mainstream the what he called the foods of commerce, which would be things like flour and sugar and oil and things like that. So all of these sort of tribes or remote groups of people were living off of the land. Maybe they were indigenous, or like the Inuit and the Maasai and these different tribes. And he started to note like what they were eating. And he looked at their diets, and they varied very like greatly because they were, some were in equatorial areas, some were in, like near Antarctica. So there were lots of differences in geographical regions. So their diets varied greatly, but they all had these certain commonalities. So they had the first commonality, and a question on our test was, what was Weston A. Price's biggest regret? And it was that he could not find a truly healthy vegan society, that there was no society that existed that was purely plant-based. Every single one of these groups, and there were hundreds of them, had some sort of animal foods. They all had animal foods, that some of which were raw. And so we might be like, oh, like raw food, what? But I mean, look, we eat sushi, we'll have raw milk, beef tartare. So there is some, egg yolks that we might have on something. So we do have some raw animal foods, but this was an important part. We had tons of fat-soluble vitamins. Minerals were like 10 times what we had today. So what he found was that these people had beautiful wide faces. They had wide arches that could accommodate all their teeth. They, women would have 10 babies and not lose one tooth or have one cavity. And if apparently this is a thing that I didn't know about, but when you have a baby, you lose tons of nutrients. And so you're more prone to losing teeth and tooth decay and things like that afterwards. So, and what would happen is if these tribes of people got in touch with more modern civilizations and started having the quote foods of commerce, the very next generation would have the narrowing of the arches, they'd have crowding of the teeth. And what he said was that they were less handsome. And so if you look at all the pictures, because there's pictures in these books of his travels, and you look at all the people, they are very good looking people. And then the next generation, if they had those new foods, they were not as good looking, and it was wild to see. So I mean, that was a lot of what the premise of the program was about. And we learned about the foundations of health. We learned all about digestion and blood sugar and a nutrient-dense whole foods diet. Like, these are the tenets of getting your body back to optimal. And so as a nutritional therapist, we focus on the foundations of health to help the body sort of come back into balance. And the premise is that if any of these foundations are off, we're going to get consequences of that. So if we don't have adequate digestion and we our blood sugar's off, we might have, hormone imbalances, thyroid things going on. So we always want to support the body at the foundations, and we don't treat any diseases or anything like that. So I know I talk about like reactive hypoglycemia, but what I do is I look at your blood sugar handling, I look at your adrenals, I look at your minerals, I look and see if you can digest fats. So that's how we're targeting things. You can have whatever diagnosis, but I'm going to help you find out what it is that your body needs. And so I almost equate nutritional therapy to like, if you go to a mechanic, you have to look under the hood. And that's sort of what nutritional therapy is doing. We're looking under the hood. We're looking, what's your stomach acid like? How's your liver functioning? Like, we're looking at these individual organs and the systems instead of just saying, what are your macros? Like, eat healthy carbs. Like, we're doing more deep work, and that's why it's extremely healing and people get incredible results. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really impressive. That's one thing that, like, as a traditionally trained dietitian, we were really not taught to dig that deep, to really look at digestion, like you said, talk about stomach acid, talk about some of the real nuances versus just like, here's your healthy whole grain plan, which probably won't even be that successful anyway. So yeah, that was one thing I was really impressed with as a nutritional therapist, just how deep of a dive you guys go. So that's super impressive.
Thank
Well, I
you.
want to jump to a few, if you're welcome, a few personal questions, and we'll swing back around to some of your marketing and other questions, but
Okay.
just some fun stuff. So do you think you have enough cats?
Do I have enough cats? I
Yes.
have three cats currently, and I'm dying for another one, but it's not going to happen right now. My wife wants to get a dog next, and so when we move, we might get a dog. But I feel like I play with my cats twice a day, and feeding them is like, there was a meme where it was like, two cats feels like two cats. Three cats feels like 15 cats. And it's so true. It's just like, it feels like a lot. But as a cat lover, there's so many and adorable ones out there that need homes, and it just pulls on your heartstrings. And I want more. But yeah, I'll settle for now with my lovely
Three sounds like a good number to me.
three.
But so I heard you are moving to Portland, Oregon, to be
No.
closer to my wife and I because we are such good buddies. So tell me all about that. I'm super stoked.
We are not moving to Portland. I'm so sorry, Michelle. I
Ah.
need the sun. But we do, another friend was like, when are you moving to Austin? We're not moving to Austin, but we are looking to move to the Atlanta area because my wife LJ is in film school right now, and the film industry is really big there. They're calling it like the LA of the South. And to me, it has more seasons, which I'm, after 15, 14, 15 years in Florida, I actually threw my hands up and said, oh my gosh, I'm actually tired of the heat. I couldn't believe it because if you asked me this in 2008 when I moved here, I'd be like, I never want to experience any cold ever again. And now I'm like, all right, I'm hot. I'm done with this. I'm like, give me a sweatshirt, put me in front of a fire at night. That's what I want. So I really do want the seasons. And so I'm excited for that and hiking. And I'm not as much of a beach person as I spent my whole life growing up on Long Island, was at the beach and in Florida at the beach. And now I'm pretty beached out. So definitely ready for the mountains. And yeah, I'm excited. So we'll probably
Yeah,
be
the mountains are
moving.
pretty awesome. I think you're
Yeah.
gonna love it. I think you're gonna love it.
Yeah.
Although, well, I was gonna say I think you'd love Portland more, but it gets a little rough in the
Yeah.
winter months without the sun. Well, tell me a little bit about LJ. Like, do you guys work together? Is she part of your brand?
So LJ was working for me at one point, but she knew that that was just kind of, we both knew that was something temporary because she wanted to get out of the industry that she was working in and kind of find something else. She's a massage therapist, personal trainer, mobility specialist, but it just wasn't calling to her. She told me, remember, you were good at speech, but didn't want to do it. And same thing that she was good at this, but just didn't want to do it. So she went back to film school. And so she's not working for me anymore, but my team has grown and there's now three people working for me. So yeah, so it's pretty cool. And LJ is killing it in film school and is going to finish in January. So she's almost done.
Oh, fantastic. That's a really good point to make too, that just because you're good at something, if it's not really calling you and, pulling at your heartstrings, it's not something you have to do, right? Just because you're good at it, you gotta follow your intuition. I get asked this a lot, so I'm curious, do you ever miss eating cookies, cake, those high sugary foods, or do you actually eat them every once in a while?
So my go-to, if I'm going to indulge, is always going to be ice cream. So things like cake, what honestly, I miss frosting. I was a frosting frosting person. That was one of my foods that I would binge on, or just like sneak. If I was babysitting, I'd grab a clean spoon. If they had frosting, take a huge spoon of frosting, and especially the funfetti. And oh my gosh, have you looked at, if you've ever looked at the ingredients of the funfetti frosting, it's like, how does something so delicious, how is it made of something that's so bad? It's so crazy. But I do miss frosting. I don't really miss, I'm not like a cookie cake person. I'm more like a chocolate ice and ice cream and like chocolate mousse kind of person. So once in a while, I might miss it, but I feel like there's other foods that I have that I feel like are, the replacement.
Yeah, so interesting question. Did you ever struggle with infertility? Because you had talked about having PCOS, and if so, like, were you and LJ interested in having kids potentially?
So I do not know if I ever struggled with infertility, but as someone with PCOS who didn't get a period for 6 months at a time, then 3 months at a time, if I was trying to get pregnant, that would have been an issue for sure. But we don't want to have kids. So it's not something that I try for or that could accidentally happen to me. So it's just not a thing in my world. So, but I do get a regular cycle and based on my temperatures and things like that, and my lack of negative symptoms, I think I'm ovulating every single month. So that's as far as I could tell you in terms of the fertility stuff.
Yeah, and potentially working with people who have PCOS, because I've heard people say, "Oh, I have PCOS, like I'm having trouble getting pregnant. I really want to get pregnant." Do you think that, really kind of diving in and helping them with the blood sugar issues could help, could potentially reverse PCOS or help with fertility?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And a friend of mine, you all may know her, the ketogenic nutritionist Temple on Instagram. She had PCOS and did keto and got pregnant. And she talks about a study that they did with women who had PCOS who were infertile and were struggling with infertility, and they put them on a ketogenic diet, and about like eight women had to drop out of the study because they got pregnant. So it was very successful. It was a bad study, I guess, but it was really successful. So there's a lot of ways to restore fertility by starting with optimizing blood sugar and insulin levels for sure.
Yeah, and so this is a good question. What do you enjoy doing on the weekends or when you're not working? Because I know I've talked to you on the weekends before and you're working. So when you're
Don't call
not
me out,
working,
Michelle.
yeah.
So I'm trying to have better
Hey, you gotta,
boundaries.
it's a lot. For people who aren't familiar, when you're your own business owner, it's a lot and it's quite the hustle. But when you aren't working, what do you enjoy?
And I'm trying to get away from that constant hustle because I feel like
Yes.
I'm at a better place where, it's hard. It's hard to support your family and make enough money and feel confident that you're going to be good to go. And, because right now, as I'm the sole breadwinner because LJ's in school, so she'll be, working soon enough, but it's a lot of pressure, right? And so I found that I am working a lot on the weekends, but have been trying to really draw that line and cut off. So one thing, I love being in nature. I love being outside, but it's kind of hard in the summer months, as we were just talking about in Florida. So I've been inside a lot. I like hanging out with my friends. I love going to the gym. I like lifting weights. And I feel like I've been a little bit of out of touch with some hobbies and things, and that's something that I need to work into my schedule again is that I really need to make more time for things like I used to really enjoy doing acro yoga. So I was a very avid acro yogi. I taught classes, I traveled, I went to all sorts of conventions, and I did crazy things like whips and pops, like I was getting thrown in the air. So I really miss acro and teaching acro and doing yoga. And I also miss tap dancing. I used to be a competition tap dancer. Haven't done that in a while, but I'm kind of looking forward to finding a studio that does adult classes. So that would be really, really fun to do. And when I really do like to travel and hike and go to good restaurants, you know, sometimes it's hard because I just don't feel that great after I eat at restaurants, but I have been asking more consistently if they can cook the foods in butter, and it makes such a difference to get rid of a lot of those vegetable oils. And so it's very worth the ask to do that and just say, can they cook the food in real butter instead of oil, please? The oil makes me kind of sick. And they're like, oh yeah, I'll ask. And usually they do it. So it's a
That's
good
awesome.
thing. Yeah.
Very cool. So, what is your favorite movie?
Oh gosh, I'm so not a movie person. I used to love the movie Girl Interrupted. I like funny movies, so I like light funny movies because I get scared at movies. I don't like something that's going to increase my anxiety. So things like Superbad, Pineapple Express, Old School, those kind of movies. The Other Guys, yeah.
Those are fun. Those are
Yeah.
fun. Well, talk to me about marketing. I mean, do you, excuse me, do you do everything yourself?
For marketing, yeah. I do my own marketing. I never studied it. Some people have asked me if I studied it, and I was like, no, studied speech therapy, which doesn't really help me out in this too much. But yeah, I do my own marketing and yeah, make my own graphics and stuff.
Yeah, your graphics are so fantastic. I love your
Thank you.
graphics. So as a health coach and someone who's created their own business, like what would you say gives you the most satisfaction? I'm sure, absolutely sure that helping people heal does. But yeah, tell me just a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I feel like business-wise, in terms of being like an entrepreneur and business owner, is when just creating content that people will say, oh my gosh, this is me. I didn't know that. Like when they have that, when you give someone that light bulb moment, because for me, that's so powerful. That's really why I started doing this in the first place, because I just want people to know this information. I always consider myself more of a teacher than anything else. I always wanted to be a teacher, and I was like kind of like a one-on-one teacher as a speech therapist, and I still consider myself to be a teacher. I love just sharing information with people and putting it in a way that they can really understand, that gives them that light bulb moment. Like you take something complex and it's like, oh my gosh, this whole time I was having blood sugar issues, I had no idea. And then of course, as a practitioner, I mean, maybe they're kind of the same, is just some of the stories, some of the people who I've been able to help, they were at just such really low places. And to hear a lot of these people have blood sugar issues where their blood sugar is crashing all the time. They have reactive hypoglycemia or hypoglycemia, and they're having to eat every few hours. Their life is a living hell. I've had a lot of people say that they've had suicidal thoughts and calling the ambulance, going to the emergency room, eating 20 times a day, waking up at night multiple times to eat. I mean, they are just trapped in what they call blood sugar prison. And to hear that, like one of my students, I'm gonna start crying. She was crying on the couch all day. She couldn't even take a shower without her blood sugar crashing. Couldn't walk to the mailbox because it was too much exertion. Her blood sugar would start crashing. Had to quit her job. She lives on an island. Couldn't leave the island because she'd have to travel by plane. I mean, waking up in the middle of the night to eat hard-boiled eggs. I mean, her life was miserable. And after working together, she was in my blood sugar mastery program. She was so dedicated. And after just a few months, I mean, no blood sugar crashes, down to eating 3 times a day, She's up on ladders painting her living room. She's swimming in the sea over the summer. She's with her nieces and nephews and able to, watch them because a lot of people, if they have kids, they can't be alone with their kids. They can't drive. She took a plane flight to go see her family. She got a job. I mean, she was applying for jobs and got jobs. She can take showers. She's like, sometimes I take 3 or 4 showers a day just because I can, because her blood sugar is not crashing anymore. So it's just like when you give someone their life back, it's just there's no greater feeling, I feel like. So that's my ultimate.
Yeah, that's incredible. And one thing I want to highlight that just jumped out to me, and this always jumps out to me when we talk about people's health journeys, is it was relatively quick. You know, I worked with people who were type 2 diabetic and stuff that have been suffering for decades. And that transformation, you said 2 to 3 months. That's absolutely incredible.
She still has
Talk to me
healing to
about,
go.
oh, for
I will
sure.
say that. There's still things, but like to get to a place where you're relatively stable and just feeling just absolutely night and day, that can happen really quickly. And then we keep refining, and she keeps getting better, and she keeps hitting these new milestones. Like the job thing was like 6 months later. So it was like 3 months later, and she's doing all these things. And then like 6 months later, apply for a job. So what is she going to be doing in another 6 months, right? So it's just the possibilities are endless. So it's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And just, but just to get to the point of like functional, like, oh my gosh, I can actually function as a human is relatively quick. And then you said like all of a sudden you're like achieving your dream. So that's amazing. You know, a lot of people talk about dealing when they're dealing with changing their diet, they are struggling with you know, emotional barriers, you know, feeling using food as a coping mechanism, feeling, you know, I'm sure you've had people tell you like, I can't see my life without sugar or without caffeine or without bread. So, I mean, personally, did you ever have an emotional hurdle to improve your health? And what would you tell somebody else? Or how do you work with your clients when you deal with that?
So I think the thought of giving up foods, like my diet is unrecognizable. I don't think I eat anything now that I ate back then. And I mean, I grew up on eating all these breakfast foods and processed carbs and dairy, and I don't eat any of that now, and chicken breast, and I don't eat any of that now. And it's crazy to me that I could look and be say, oh my gosh, these were all my favorite foods, and I was obsessed with them, and I don't eat any of them now. And for me, I was in just such a dark place that I was so ready to get rid of something if it meant I had health to gain. So the emotional piece wasn't as hard for me. I mean, I will say that sometimes I notice that my emotional or certain triggers for me to maybe go and like stand in front of the pantry and maybe like think about snacking would be if sometimes it's if I'm seeking connection with people, I might be driven towards some sort of emotional eating, and then procrastination. So if I'm sitting down in front of like a really hard like I'm like, okay, I have to write this email, or I have to create this program. If it's like this big task, I'm like, maybe I should eat first. So I find myself that's the probably those that biggest hurdle. But in terms of giving foods up, I always felt like I was giving up like 2 seconds of pleasure and had so much more to gain. And that I always associated, these foods like pancakes and cereal and whatever, that has to be associated with the symptoms it comes with. It comes with me feeling tired and not well and not being my best self and having PCOS and whatever. So it's like I can choose all of that comes with the negative side effects, or I can choose to not have it and have something else instead, like a piece of dark chocolate and a steak, and I can be happier with that dark chocolate and the steak because it's helping me. My ultimate goal is that I want to feel good so that I can be my best self. And I want to serve people. So I need my brain to be functioning, to be able to speak on a podcast or to be interviewed or to create content or to create programs and to help, coaching and all these things that I have to do. I have to be on. I have to have energy. I have to have drive. And so and then all the things that I want to do outside of work, like if I want to show up as a wife, as a friend, as a daughter, I need to be my best self and functioning as my best self. So I always feel like that takes precedence over 5 seconds of, a delicious taste. And you start to get so used to like real food tastes so good. So you say, oh, what can I have? So I'm not sitting there mourning for the stuff that I can't have anymore. And yes, that's a natural process to go through. And you do have to grieve. I have people in my program right now, it's week one. And they're like, oh my gosh, I have to get rid of gluten. And this is hard. Like, how do you do it? I'm like, I've been gluten-free for 10 years. Like, it's just so second nature. I just don't even look at it as food anymore. And it takes time to get there. Like, you'll see everyone eating pizza if that's your thing, or eating bread. Like, some people love bread. And I was never a bread person. I was a sweet bread person. So like, I had French toast and like French toast bagel. So if it was bread with sweetness on it, like, pancakes, waffles, then that was it. But like bread that wasn't sweet, I'm like, I could easily, for me, that was easier to give up. I'm more of a sugar than a carb person. But you do have to grieve that. You see these people eating those things, and you have that moment where you feel sorry for yourself. I've gone through that too. I'm like, oh, everyone can eat this, but not me. But then I think of what I know, and I think, well, people who are eating by default or kind of just eating a standard American diet, this is a kind of a messed up thing to say, but I know it's coming. Like, you know what's coming. You know what's inevitable when you've worked in the places that I've worked at and seen all these people in a nursing home. And maybe there's, a select few that aren't going to have these chronic diseases, but that's the inevitable if you keep eating that way. And so I think that the knowledge that I have of what happens inside the body is also a really powerful tool to help keep me on track. And that's why I also like to give people knowledge, because if I know the why, if I know that every time I eat gluten, it's inflaming my gut, it's opening the lining of my gut and giving me leaky gut every single time, it's loaded with glyphosate, which is going to mess up my gut bacteria and, so many more things. If I know that, it's easy for me to say no. If it was just like, oh, Danny said that I can't have gluten, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel empowering. So I feel empowered often to make the choices that I make, because I know that I'm doing a good thing for my body, and I try to focus on what I can have instead of what I can't. So I don't know if any of that's helpful.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And I feel like, I feel like you and I are very fortunate that we've had the experience to work in places I worked in several different hospitals, and you have as well. So we have seen, and like you said, it's not just like, oh, this person's 90 or 100. There are people in their, 30s, 40s, 50s that are dealing with these really intense chronic metabolic issues that all, for a very large part stem back to what we eat. But because, a lot of people might eat, a donut or pizza, and they don't have a massive reaction right then, they don't necessarily associate it with, like, over time, this is really creating a problem. And one
And
thing I did want to
it's never
go
the
ahead, sorry.
one time, right? It's never the one time. So if I had one donut, I'm going to be fine. But we don't have one. We have patterns when we eat, right? And so it's never just once, and that's what builds up. But you were saying?
Oh yeah, and I think one thing that just really kind of stood out to me is how difficult it is that for that initial transition.
It
And I
is.
really appreciate how much you said that, even grieving that loss of food, and just respecting that, because I know sometimes, people are just like, oh, just stop eating cookies, stop eating cake, like making it to be very easy. I know when I went very low carb initially, I mean, that first week, I kind of felt like I wanted to claw my eyes out, like almost literally having withdrawal. Like, it was incredibly difficult. But once you get past that initial, that initial week or 2 weeks, my goodness, like how much better you feel. Like, you could say, Michelle, I'll give you 100 grand if you'll go back and eat a standard American diet. And I would say no. Even I could use the 100 grand right now, but you just feel so much better. Like, you once you have your health back, like, it literally changes how you think about what you're putting in your body.
Absolutely. And it is really hard. And there's certain things that are easier for certain people than others. Like, for me, real easy to give up a certain food. For me to be consistent working out, not as easy. That's really easy for you, right? Well, maybe you have both of those things easy, but for me, what's not easy is making time to sit and meditate, right? So some people, it's like They've been meditating for years. That's not hard for them. Changing their food is hard. So everyone's going to find that certain areas are going to be a little bit more challenging than others, but also to realize like this is from getting rid of basically processed food to eating real food is kind of the conversation. That is extremely hard. This is a radical act nowadays. Like people, and you're seen as someone who's doing something so different and so extreme, and meanwhile it's only extreme because our current climate of food and our society around processed food is, I think that's extreme, how where we took food, like a Twinkie, that is an extreme thing, you know, when it comes to how food used to be. So it is this radical change that we have, and it's really going against the fabric of our society and what every, you know, what the media is telling you, what commercials are telling you, what the advertisements you see all over the place. You walk into Dr. Paul Saladino, Carnivore MD. He has all these reels recently where he's going into hospitals. He's going into, you know, university hospitals and doctor schools, and he's going into these cafeterias and saying, "Look at the food that is around. Everything is processed. Heavily processed, tons of sugar, you know, soda, energy drinks, and made with seed oils." So it's like it's extremely difficult. And then talk about the people who don't have access. You know, look at all these lower income communities. There's no Whole Foods around. There's no information for them. And so that also is really hard. You know, I understand that I come from a place of privilege and all of the privilege that is like, you know, with every single word that I'm talking about, I'm recognizing, and I know that I don't even fully understand all of the privilege that I have, which is why I always want to give back and share free information. But like, it's so hard also to eat the way that I do. And I understand that it comes with, you know, there's a an investment in it as well. So you have to shift some of your money that maybe was going to be for a trip. Well, now it's going to be to eating healthy and avoiding, you know, staying out of the hospital. And you know, it really is an investment in your long-term health for sure, because there is always a cost with everything. There is a cost. And so the cost is you can pay more upfront to have more health, or you can reduce the cost upfront and eat cheaper, you know, more processed foods. And then the cost might come later on. That's kind of how I see it. So
Yeah, I think one probably the biggest take-home message I took from that is I think people need to be ready and to be aware that what you're doing and how you're eating is outside the norm. And like you said, it's not because the norm is correct. The norm, we know now statistically, 93% of people are metabolically unhealthy. We only have 7% of people in the United States. So if you are there and you're eating something like you said, a steak and an avocado or a salad, like you are eating correctly, you know, when everybody else is eating all the breads and bagels and donuts. And our hospitals and our schools right now are kind of leading the way. Like you said, if you look at their cafeteria, having worked in the hospital, I worked in the hospital for 11 years, and I would say 95% of the time, I mean, and maybe even more, if you went to the break room, cookies, donuts, all, you know, lots of snack foods. So, kind of maybe getting some mental armor on that you're going to be eating differently because you want to live differently. And just be also being very aware that that does come with it. Everything in life comes with an opportunity cost, right? But how you feel like totally changes your whole life. Well, we've got just a couple more questions. So, one, what is your favorite memory?
Oh, my favorite memory.
Other than hanging out with me when I came and visited you.
Well, there's this one memory that is really powerful for me, and I used to think about it when I tried to manifest working my way out of speech therapy. And it's this memory I used to like kind of like rehearse it and see it happening all the time so I could manifest it. And it was handing in my keys and my badge at work as a speech therapist and like walking out of there and knowing that I didn't have to go back. And I mean, I worked through this in therapy with my therapist, because I feel like it was so traumatic, almost in a weird way, like a lowercase t traumatic for me to be a speech therapist when I so didn't want to be, and I wanted to be doing what I'm doing now. And so that day, it's funny because I kind of remember how it happened, how I would think about it and like rehearse it over and over. So I can't really remember how it did actually happen when I just walked out. But that was like one of the most powerful memories because I feel like I did it and I was able to just rip the Band-Aid off. And yeah. And then my memory, I have a really strong memory of going to Disney World with my family when I was 10 in 1996. And that was that my aunt used to say, like at every place that we were, she was like, ah, isn't this just such a magical moment? And I remembered it. I remember her saying that. And I just remember that. And saying that, isn't this just such a magical moment? Is just such a beautiful way to bring you into the present moment. And, isn't this a magical moment? Like we can connect. Like I wouldn't know you without Zoom. And, here I am doing my 100th podcast episode. So it is a magical moment.
It is, and I love that you're. I think sometimes, it just in this country, I'm sure in the world, we associate like feeling good with having cool stuff, or even just obviously in our nutrition world, like, oh, I'm gonna eat these sweets and I'm gonna feel so good. Where what I have found, what makes me truly happy and what like lights me up is experience. Like you said, it's spending time with people we really care about. It's going for that goal, whether for me it's like a race or I'm in the process of writing a grant right now. So I love that, like for you it was experiences, it was things you were really proud to do. So
Love that.
super, super cool. So do you miss your family? Especially, I know you're close to your mom, lives in a different state, and now you're moving potentially to Atlanta here pretty soon. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, my mom submitted that question. Yes, I miss you, Mom. yes, I do. I do miss my family, but I talk to them all the time. So it's great that I have a really close relationship with them. I have one brother. He's 3 years younger than me, and we talk constantly. I talk to all three of my parents, like I think all three of my parents, my two parents and my brother. So all three of them. I think I talked to them multiple times yesterday. So we do talk
Nice.
all the time. And since I've been away since college, it's just kind of been our dynamic as an adult. And so I get to see my mom multiple times. She comes and visits a lot. And, I go home to New York once in a while and get to see everyone. So it was fun. When I went on my vacation to North Carolina this summer, my brother happened to be in North Carolina at the same time, and we got to meet up. We went tubing on a river, so that was super fun. And then the year before, when I went to North Carolina, my dad was there, and I met up with him. It was like, why do I keep meeting up with family when I go on vacation to North Carolina? But I do see them, but I do also miss them for sure. And extended family as well, cousins, my grandma, she's 93, still kicking. Sometimes we FaceTime. It's really sweet. She's
Oh, I
so
love
cute.
that. That's why
You think I'm
that is
tiny? She's like
amazing.
minuscule. I could fit her in my pocket. Yeah.
Oh, grandma. Well, the last question that I have for you is there something you believe, and I'm sure there is there something you believed at the start of this podcast when you started recording, now you're on your 100th episode, that has changed for you, that you've changed how you think about things?
So I think I probably have a much more relaxed view about carbs now, where I look at ketosis as a therapeutic protocol. It's not an end spot, and it's something that I think that for the very vast majority of people, and usually the exception being people with severe neurological issues like seizure disorders or certain mental health issues, certain things where they might need a ketogenic diet, MS or something, where they might need a very strong ketogenic diet for like for the long term. For the most part, most people, I feel like the goal is to get back to a place where you can be in and out of ketosis naturally and cycling carbs naturally as your body needs. And I feel like that's a really powerful place to be. So I kind of look at keto more as it's a temporary place to be, and I do see that it has negative impacts if you're in it too long. So I would say that professionally, that's one of the biggest changes, as well as I started learning about reactive hypoglycemia, and I didn't know about it that much when I started, even though I was a person who had hypoglycemia and reactive hypoglycemia. It was just, one part of my story that I kind of glossed over. And it all started with my student, Roseanne, who came to me. She was one of my clients, students in blood sugar mastery, and she was telling me that she was eating 7 Hershey bars a day to keep her sugar up. And she was having every single day, she had the same thing. She had oatmeal in the morning, she had a sandwich for lunch, and she had chicken breast cooked in canola oil for dinner. And she was having to have all those Hershey bars. And I just saw, like, oh my goodness, I can help her. Like, this is the most severe case that I've ever taken at that point. And it was just such the her story, just her pain. I just connected with it so deeply, and now we're like great friends. We're very close friends because we went through so much together. And every time I talk to her, every time I talk about her, I start crying. We always cry together, but it's just she kind of opened my eyes up to this world of reactive hypoglycemia, and so many people are struggling with it. And the advice out there is atrocious, and it's making people worse, and it's not making people better. And I've helped her and dozens of other people fully reverse and heal their reactive hypoglycemia. And now Roseanne called me, a few months back and was like, Danny, I don't have reactive hypoglycemia anymore. She's like, I don't have to think about when I eat, and I can, have a little indiscretion here and there. I just don't have it anymore. It's not, my body's not the same. And it was just like the best call I could have gotten. She's had so many wins along the way, and I just truly believe that I feel, and yes, a few days ago I kind of was having some, I call them downloads from the universe, where I just sort of hear this, like, I need to specialize in reactive hypoglycemia. Like, I want to end hypoglycemia. I want to be, a leading authority on this topic. And I already feel like I am because of how much I've had to learn and how many people I have been successful with helping, like even these really severe cases, like the one I was mentioning earlier, the one who was crashing in the shower and things. And so I've worked with these people, and I feel confident that I am able to help even some of the most severe cases. And that's, I want to be that light for those people who are just in just the most deep blood sugar prison you could ever be in. I feel like these people are having almost the worst side effects of blood sugar issues that anyone could have because they can't even live a normal life. Like, people could have type 2 diabetes. Yeah, they don't feel well, but they can go out, they can work, they can have a job, they can function for the most part. And I feel like this group of people doesn't even have that. And so, yeah, I really want to help them. And that's going to be, I'm kind of shifting a little bit of the focus in my business to really serve them and to be a voice, because these, I see these people on these Facebook groups, and they're just so confused. They're so lost. They're so hopeless. And it just pulls at my heartstrings. So, yeah, so those are some changes. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing that I find is really interesting about reactive hypoglycemia is when I struggled with an eating disorder pretty severely as a young person, I was told that, you know what, you might deal with this. You might deal with these blood sugar spikes and crashes your entire life. And I remember thinking, I was afraid to eat, and we know that about 50% of people with eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, will relapse. And I've talked to several other people who've struggled with, either anorexia or bulimia, and kind of said similar things. Like, I wanted to eat, but when I ate what they told me, when I ate, all this brown rice and this whole grain, I felt so awful. I was just scared to feel so awful. And it kind of, feeds the cycle of starvation or overeating. So I think there's actually potential for, what you're doing in that realm, which the advice in that realm is, it's pretty terrible. So yeah, those are all the questions that your followers have submitted.
Thank you. Thanks so much for chatting with me. I hope that people got something out of all these ramblings, and I'm excited to share more about my story and myself and personal life and things like that. So Thanks so much for being here, Michelle. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for sharing your story and just for all you do in this community.
Oh, thank you. Thank you too as well. I appreciate it. All right. Thanks, everyone. All right. Thank you for listening to the 100th episode of this podcast. I am so grateful for all of your likes and reviews and ratings on the show, for when you share it with friends and family. And I am looking forward to bringing you, we have so many episodes already pre-recorded, so many interviews. I have about 12 of them that I'm waiting to get out. So there's tons of great interviews on the docket for the future, for the upcoming future. And thank you to our sponsor for the show, Get So Well. Remember, if you want to test your insulin, this is a really important number to find out about your health. It's going to tell you so much helpful information. And a lot of people ask, what is the ideal range? And we want that number to be between 2 and 5, ideally. So if your blood sugar is very high, it's not going to be that low. But if your blood sugar is in a healthy range or close to that, we really want it on the lower side. So someone said to me, you know, how come the range says between 2 and 20 when I got it tested from my doctor? And that's because, you know, mainstream medicine has really no clue about wellness and prevention. They, you know, so if your insulin is around 18 or 20, that's significant insulin resistance at that point. And you're probably going to start seeing a lot of repercussions of this, even as your insulin, excuse me, gets to like 7, 8, 9, you're probably going to be having issues. So please keep this in mind. Get your insulin tested, ask your doctor, or try Get So Well and use my code Dani10 for 10% off if your doctor says no or if you don't have access to that. So thank you again for listening to the show. I will see you again next week for another episode. Thanks, everyone. Love you guys. Bye.